Hi, I'm Nick Rigoretti's, and this is the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast, the show for grapplers and martial artists that want to evolve both on and off the mat. Welcome back to the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast. I hope you guys have recovered from the last episode, the ayahuasca episode with Nathan Ratz. I know that probably blew a few minds and freaked a few people out, but I'm sure a lot of you enjoyed it as well. So before we get started, I just want to remind you guys about our main sponsor, the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood store. We have fantastic gis, belts, rash guards, t-shirts, stickers, patches, jiu-jitsu learning materials, pretty much everything you need for the jiu-jitsu lifestyle. It's all on there. And you guys can get 10% off when you use the coupon code podcast at checkout. We've just released a new navy version of our best-selling Enzo gi. So I think you guys will really appreciate that if you head on over and check it out. There's only 100 of those and they'll go real quick. So once again, check out store.jujitsubrother.com and use the coupon code podcast at checkout to get your 10% discount. So coming up now is a friend of mine named Johnny Jen. He goes by the name Johnny FD. Very interesting cat, very interesting guy. The thing I love most about him is that he's living his own truth. You know, he turned his back on the 9-to-5 life. He was a successful guy living in Los Angeles. And he had everything he thought he wanted. And one day he took a trip to Thailand and it changed his view on everything. And he decided to make a radical change and sold all his stuff, moved to Thailand, studied to become a scuba diving instructor, and did a lot of cool stuff as well. He's got some interesting insights on travel and philosophies about how we should interact with modern life. He's a very cool guy. So I hope you enjoy episode 17 of the Jiu-Jitsu Brother podcast, Johnny FD. Okay, guys, welcome to Jiu-Jitsu Brother podcast's episode 17. I'm very happy to introduce someone I've known for a long time. He's a very close friend of mine, someone who I'd call a brother. I first met him in Thailand almost 10 years ago. And his name is Johnny FD. Johnny, welcome to the show, my man.
Thank you, Nick. It's good to be on the show, buddy.
So, Johnny, the reason I wanted to have you on, you're not a jiu-jitsu black belt. That doesn't matter. I think you're a black belt in life, and you've got some very interesting stories to share. I think one of the reasons you and I gelled so well is because we both have chosen a pretty unusual primary lifestyle, which is we don't have a fixed address. And I mean, if we just want to go back, you and I, am I correct? We met in Thailand at a Tiger Muay Thai in Phuket. Is that right?
Yeah. I don't remember the specific year, but it must have been around 2010.
Okay. I thought it was a bit longer than that.
Yeah. Well, you know, it maybe it was because I first left the US. I left California at the end of 2007. And I think I discovered jiu-jitsu within the first couple of years, so maybe 2008, 2009. But either way, it's been about 10 years. And what's a bit crazy, I guess, a little bit embarrassing, is I started doing jiu-jitsu that, like, when we first met. You're one of my first, you're definitely my first one-on-one coach, but either way, that's when I started, and it's been almost 10 years, and I've done jiu-jitsu now in so many different countries. I've been rolling, you know, for that amount of time, yet I am still a white belt. I am probably the longest running white belt that's rolled in the most amount of countries and has never dedicated myself enough to even get to the blue belt level.
Okay, so I'm gonna circle back around to that in a bit, but before we do, how did you come to find yourself? Am I correct in saying that you're still without a fixed address?
Yeah, so I've been living out of a duffel bag for the last couple of years now, and I guess just to really quickly tell the story, if you guys don't know who I am, I left California in 2007 to become a dive master, and actually before then, I was literally a white belt in everything I've ever done. I've never really accomplished anything, that great. And becoming a dive master was the first time I was ever a black belt in anything. You know, being a professional scuba diver, I guess I went all the way up to probably the highest level, which is, I think they call it master scuba diver trainer, if you want to belt it that way. And it was then, that was the first time I ever really mastered anything, you know. And I've done a lot of things in my life. I used to wrestle in high school, you know, I dabbled in some other sports. And it wasn't until then that I really realized, wow, this is what it takes to go from zero, from learning something, you know, having a passion about it, learning everything you need to know, all the theory, but also putting it into practice and getting to a level where not only can you teach other people, but you can also do it professionally.
And when you say that was the first time you'd ever taken something to that level, why do you think previously you had never taken anything to that level? Is it because you weren't interested in those things you were doing? Or was it because you didn't have a strong willpower? What was the reason?
I think a lot of it was I never found anything that I was that truly that passionate about. And I always felt a little bit out of place growing up because all my friends were into traditional sports, either baseball, basketball, football, whether it's just watching or just or participating. And I always felt really left out because I was never into any of that. I mean, neither from the spectator point of view or as a participant. And I was kind of just going through life. You know, I was always trying to find the easiest way to do things, always looking for the shortcut. And it wasn't until I went on vacation in the end of 2007 and went scuba diving for the first time. And it was literally, I mean, it's probably very similar to a lot of people who listen to this. And you do a drop-in class to do jiu-jitsu, or you do your first class, and you're like, wow, I had no idea this existed. Mm-hmm. Now I'm hooked.
So when you, I think you're being overly humble, but when you're in LA, it's not that you hadn't accomplished anything. It's my understanding that you're a pretty successful businessman and you had all the trappings of, you know, modern upper middle class life in the United States. Would you say that's true? I mean, I remember you having you had a convertible and you had an apartment in Los Angeles, and it was, I mean, it's not like you were some bum living on the streets in the States, right?
I would say on paper, I did well. I mean, if you just looked at my Facebook or my MySpace at the time, it would have looked like I graduated from a good university with honors. I worked for a big U.S. corporation. I had, you know, a decent salary at the time. I was driving, I think at the time I had a Lexus LS, which is the big sedan with 20-inch rims. I had a Porsche convertible. I had another, you know, car on the side for fun. I was living in this big house in L.A., that was looked amazing and would impress people when they would come over. I wore fancy clothes that I bought in Melrose, and every weekend I would go out to Sunset Boulevard to, you know, have table service somewhere at a club or in Vegas. So if you looked at it that way, it looked like my life was very successful. And I think the reason why I even did all that is because I thought that's what it took to be happy. That's what I thought it took to become happy and be successful. And it wasn't until I went to Thailand for the first time, and the first time I went scuba diving, and the first time I learned, you know, Muay Thai and Jiu-Jitsu and all these other things I had no idea existed. It wasn't until then that I realized everything else was a facade. Everything else was a big lie, even though I didn't even know I was lying to myself.
Yeah, I mean, that's a powerful realization to come to. And I think it takes a certain level of self-reflection to even get to that point. I think a lot of people are just, they live their whole lives like that. They do what they do because they've been told it's the right thing to do. And they've never questioned whether they should be, you know, having a home and a family and a 9-to-5 job. And I guess for me, I wanted to know, was that the point? Was that when you arrived in Thailand, or had you been feeling dissatisfied before you took that trip?
I'm sure that I had that feeling kind of really throughout my whole life. I was never really 100% fulfilled, 100% happy, but I would just kind of go through the motions and thinking this is the best there is. let me just try to enjoy it. And if I didn't, I thought it was something wrong with me and not wrong with the society that I was living in or the lifestyle I had chosen, because that was just the only choice. It wasn't until I remember, like, specifically, I was in Thailand on a dive boat. I think it was on the way back from a dive where I had 2 or 3 hours just to think, because, you know, the island was a bit far away from Phuket at the time. And I was just laying there thinking, man, like, I'm just in shorts and a $2 shirt that I bought on the side of the road, and then, you know, knockoff Havaiana flip flops that I bought for $3. And I've never been this happy in my whole life. Why go back to all the stuff? You know, why not just give it all up and just start over?
I find that so interesting. You know, I always think of, you spoke to me of a friend who, he wanted to do the same as you. You'd been living in Thailand for a few years and you'd kind of, you'd adopted this lifestyle of ultimate freedom. And your buddy wanted to do the same. And you just kept saying to him, yeah, dude, we'll just do it. Like, if you just move or just sell all your stuff, quit your job and just come over. And, like, he just wouldn't do it. Like, and I said to him, yeah, I've got a friend like that as well. He keeps saying, like, he's gonna. And we both just accepted the fact that these guys are never going to do it. And I guess what I wanted to ask you is, what do you think it is ultimately that's holding those people back? Do you think it's fear, or do you think it's concern of what people think of them? Or what do you think the roots of that is?
You know, I used to try to guess or try to change them or try to help them. And I realized that everybody has their own reasons and their own excuses. And from the outside point of view, it's really easy to look and just see, you know, it's not that big of a deal. But when we're in it, it's really hard for us to see through the forest or see through the trees and, you know, and see any hope. You know, it's very easy for them to say, you don't understand, or my situation is different. Even though I've seen, you know, so many other people with the same excuses and the same reasons, or even, you know, even bigger reasons, that have figured out a way to do it. And, you know, what's really unfortunate is that friend that you're talking about, we actually had a really big fight just a year ago. He finally came out to visit me last year. Mm-hmm. And I said to him, you know, I was like, you know, aren't you, you know, you're obviously loving it here. And, you know, why are you going back to your normal life that you're not happy at? And he just, I don't know, he just had, you know, more reasons, more and more excuses. And I finally kind of just called him out on it. And I feel bad because I talked about it on my podcast. You know, I didn't use his actual name, but it was very clear that it was him. And I think maybe subconsciously, I wanted him to know that I was talking about him, and hoping that he would hear it and snap out of it and say, okay, you know what, let me go after what will make me happy. But instead, it actually pushed him further away, and he hasn't talked to me since.
Well, I mean, so much of what you just said, I've kind of experienced something similar with one of my best friends. I have a lot of questions. I think I want to dive a little bit deeper. So why do you sometimes think that the reason you are happier in a place like that without any of those roots or any of those constraints of or responsibilities of that the average person would have, the average person living in America or Europe or somewhere like that, do you think it's because you never really saw a great example of that, of what it could be? Like, I know for me personally, my family life at home was really not good. You know, like growing up, like, home was not a place where I felt at peace or I felt free or I felt relaxed due to a bunch of reasons. And I look at my close friend Mark, I spend a lot of time with him and his family, and I see that, you know, he has a mortgage and he's taken on board all those responsibilities. He has like 3 children and he's happily married, and their house is the complete opposite of that. It's something that it's a refuge, you know. And I guess My question is, do you think that maybe, and when I ask this question, I ask it with full respect because it's a question I ask of myself all the time. Do you think that maybe the issue is not with the lifestyle, the issue is with you yourself?
You know, that's a hard question to answer because I think if I grew up in, you know, the perfect home and I was happy at my job and I had gotten married young and, you know, everything was great, I think I would be happy. And I know there's a lot of people living in, you know, back home in the Western world that have just a typical life, normal 9 to 5 job. They have a mortgage for 30 years, they have car payments, things like that, and they're perfectly content and perfectly happy. And I think if I was in that situation, I never would have felt the need to do what I'm doing now. And honestly, now that I've kind of accomplished all these other things and been traveling now for 10 years and been living abroad and have pretty much checked off everything on my bucket list, I strive for that again. And I've actually been, you know, thinking about, you know, and dreaming about getting a house in either San Diego or near Austin and having that normal life again. So I think a lot of it is we want what we don't have, and needing to kind of fill those buckets of need.
So interesting you mentioned that because that was going to be my next question. I'm at a similar place. I've come full circle now. I think a lot of people might look at your lifestyle, my lifestyle, and there is a lot of freedom, and we have done amazing things, and we've traveled to these crazy places, and met beautiful women, and like done all these cool things. And what they don't see is, like me sleeping on a friend's couch because for whatever reason that's what it's come to. I'm in a foreign country to teach a jiu-jitsu seminar, and like I'm arriving in a hotel, and like I don't know, like I wake up in the middle of the night and I don't know where I am, and there's that like feeling of rootlessness, and just like there's no solid foundation on which to build anything. A lot of people don't see that.
Well, a good example of that is last month I turned 36 and I was in Ukraine. I was there by myself. Luckily I had a friend who came to visit me towards the last half of the trip, but for the first month and a half I was completely alone there and it was exciting. You know, on one hand I was visiting a new country that has probably the most beautiful women in the world, and I'm rich there because their currency is currently devalued. So not only is everything 25% of what it used to cost a few years ago, but my salary was 10 times more than even a doctor in Ukraine. So
Well,
on paper, I was supposed to enjoy, you know, the crap out of it. And in some, you know, some cases I did. But at the same time, it's, you know, I on my birthday, I realized, what am I doing with my life? I'm, you know, I don't know anybody here. And sure, you know, I went, you know, I had a dinner with a bunch of people I had just met that week, and it was fun. You know, it was a bunch of people that were from different countries. We went out to, you know, to night like a really nice dinner that would have been 5 times the price back home or 10 times the price in New York. You know, we got to drink and party with, you know, gorgeous girls that maybe you would only see, you know, during fashion week somewhere. And on paper, everything was great. But I found myself just wondering, like, what am I doing with my life? Why am I here? Like, what is the purpose of all this? And even training jiu-jitsu there, I think if anyone's wondering what it's like training in a place like Kiev in Ukraine, it's hard to find, like, because everything is in Russian or in Ukrainian. So it's, you know, literally trying to search with Google Translate for a place to train from. And it's not like San Diego where you park your car on the street and then there's an academy that's very well lit and well written. It's on the fourth floor of an abandoned school or something. And it's impossible to find. And you get there and they're teaching in Russian, and I'm just sitting there with a bunch of, you know, these big Eastern European people that look cold, stone cold, and they're, you know, they're he's giving the instruction in a language that I cannot understand, and I'm rolling with people that, you know, I'm thinking like, if they just decide to like throw, you know, smash me and throw me out the window, there's nothing I can do. And I think the kind of the saving point of it is, especially with jiu-jitsu, it really is, at least in my experience, like, if it's the same everywhere you go in the world, and people really welcome you, you know, into their family just as soon as you arrive.
Yeah, I understand what you mean, and I've experienced something very similar. But you know, the nature of the lifestyle that you and I have been leading means that, like, these families that you kind of get adopted into this new family, but then you leave, you know, and it's like you might come back, but you might not. And it's never going to be the kind of family that the same as the one at the academy where you've been training for 10 years. Do you know what I mean? And you guys are like proper, proper brothers, and you guys have all been to tournaments together, and you've seen each other get belts. And it's a very different thing to when you're just the guy who pops in for a couple of weeks and rolls and goes out and has dinner and drinks with the guys and then leaves.
Yeah. And even with that, I mean, that's a big part of the reason why I've never gotten my blue belt.
That's what I was going to come back around to. I think that's got probably something to do with it, right?
Yeah, because, you know, I'm never at any academy for more than 6 weeks at a time, and no instructor in the right mind is going to want to promote me in that amount of time, especially because I show up with terrible cardio, you know, if I'm not training for 2 months and traveling so much, and it takes me that 6 weeks to even get back into kind of grappling shape and understand the way they're doing things. And it's this weird thing where it's life is all about, I guess, your priorities. And by me choosing this path and this journey, it's been really, really hard to get in really deep with really anything. Mm-hmm. You know, I think aside from the first couple of years where I just chose one thing and I was living in one place, you know, for example, when I was first going through my Dive Master course, that was my life for 4 years. And that made it very easy to, you know, go from zero to like a scuba diving professional. Mm-hmm. And then when I did Muay Thai, it was the same thing. I lived in Thailand pretty much in the same place 11 months of the year, maybe even the whole year. And I was just at one gym training there, competing there. Mm-hmm. And that allowed me to, you know, to get to a high level as well. But in the last couple of years, I've been moving every 1 or 2 months, and my life's been a mess since then.
It's funny you say that, because, I mean, I've been, for the last, it's coming up on 5 years now that I've been doing that, probably moving every 3 months. And I just realized that even though I like to consider that, I like to believe that I've accomplished a bunch of stuff, you know, I just was thinking of my business partner the other day and the hell I put this dude through, because he never knows where I am or what time zone I'm on. Or like, he's got all these different phone numbers for me, because every time I get to a new place, I get a new SIM card for my phone. And, you know, he wants to help expand and grow the business and stuff. And then I'm kind of like waking up in Japan or something, and I'm jet lagged, and it kind of takes, another thing I'm sure you're aware of, is it takes so much energy arriving in a new place, because, you know, if you've settled somewhere and you've got a home and routines, it's very different to when you get to like your destination, this new place, and you've got to recreate all these little routines, and that takes a lot of energy. And just remembering where stuff is, you know, and remembering or figuring out like how you can make your life flow smoothly, you have to reset up every time, and that takes a lot of energy. And it's, I don't know if you'd agree, but it's kind of hard to focus.
Yeah, and in the beginning it was fun. It was exciting spending half a day walking around the city trying to find a place to get a haircut, or try to find a place that has Wi-Fi so I can log into my computer and do some work. But now I'm at a point where I miss that routine, which is why, like, I've been staying longer in places, and it's always tempting because there's always something on the other side. There's always something to do. Every time I arrive somewhere, I have friends who are arriving somewhere, else in across the world, and there's really no reason why I can't fly over there and meet them because, my business is location dependent. I have enough money in the bank now where I can fly, pick up and fly there. I don't have any responsibilities. So I can literally just take off and say, okay, let's spend 2 weeks in Australia. Let's spend 2 weeks here. Let's spend a few weeks here. But I've been forcing myself to stick around for a minimum of 2, if not 3 months, wherever I go, even if I'm not completely happy there. But I'm really trying to make the most of it and establishing a routine and finding, things that I do like about it.
Do you think that it might be a case of, I mean, something I've realized that is there's no such thing as a perfect place. Like everywhere has got its issues. Thailand's amazing and free and happy and everything, but the infrastructure's crappy sometimes, and the locals don't necessarily always appreciate you. Like a place like USA's got amazing infrastructure and great capitalistic vibe, but it sometimes can feel, I don't know, overly commercialized, et cetera. I could find pros and cons of pretty much every place I've been. And I sometimes wonder that guys like you and I, perhaps the fact that we can just pick up and go whenever we feel, whenever things get difficult, or whenever it gets, I don't know, whenever we get uncomfortable, I'm starting to wonder if maybe that it's kind of hurt us more than it's helped us, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's helped us up until a certain point, but then I think after that point, it becomes a delusion if we continue looking for that perfect utopia that we know already doesn't exist. I think what I've been, one of the reasons why I've been moving around so much for the last couple of years is I will every time I go somewhere new, I'll unlock a new journey or a new location, either through people I meet or just seeing it on a map somewhere. And for example, I'm on the Canary Islands right now, and for Europeans, it's like their Hawaii, and everybody's heard of it. A lot of people have been there, but I've literally never heard of it until just a few months ago before I arrived. And now that I'm here, I'm thinking like, wow, maybe this is the perfect place, but then.
I've heard you say that so many times, though.
Yeah.
Seriously.
And I think I finally come to the conclusion that there really isn't a perfect place. There's always going to be pros and cons wherever you are, but there are definitely going to be better places than some.
Yeah, that's true.
And there's going to be the perfect place for you at that moment. And I think for me, I think on paper, the easiest place would be back in California, because not only am I from there, I have friends and family close by. I'm a US citizen, so I can just stay there without visa issues. But and places like for example, San Diego is amazing, not only for jiu-jitsu, but for the beach, for nature. People are friendly, there's not as much traffic as LA. But then I have to deal with high income tax, and state income tax. I have to deal with high cost of living and all those things that make me think maybe I should just go back to Chiang Mai, where you have all the other downsides, but everything is so cheap and so easy, and it's a hard decision.
And that's it's the paradox of choice, right? The fact that you have the decision to make is both a blessing and a curse, because someone who might not have these opportunities, sure, they can look at your lifestyle with longing, but they never have to deal with that. They never, because they don't even have the choice. And in a way, that's there's something to be said for that.
Yeah, but if you, I guess if you had to ask me if I'd rather not have the choice at all, it's always better to have the choice. But maybe it's time for me just to make a decision.
I'm starting to, I mean, like, I've made my decision, you know, like I want to go live in the States, and my fiance is American, and we've applied for this fiance visa, and I'm in South Africa at the moment just waiting for this visa to come. And it's hugely frustrating because I can usually, for the last 5 years, I've been rootless and drifting, but now when I want to go and put roots down, I'm not able to. I'm at the mercy of the US government, and it's very, very difficult for me because now I'm, as I said, I'm kind of burnt out on this, and it's time for me to take things to the next level, but I can't. I guess you still have that choice. You can go do it whenever you want. So for me, I just, when you say it to me, I'm just like, geez, Johnny, it's so easy. Just make your choice, you know?
Yeah, and I think on paper it really is, and I think this is why it's been so hard for me even to talk to anyone about it. It's because most people they look at me like, Johnny, you're an idiot. Just choose one, or the other, or because they haven't been in this situation, it seems like a very easy choice. But I guess there's just so much more to it. I mean, part of it is it was so hard for me to leave. California in the first place, because I had huge issues with just owning too much stuff, and like I would always shop and buy things in hopes to make me happy. And I know that every time I go back to the US now, I load up on just garbage from Amazon, and I show up at home and I literally have 30 boxes full of things that I'm like, I need this. And I pre-plan, months in advance before I go, and I start shipping things to my parents' house. And On one hand, obviously I didn't need it because I was fine when I was in Thailand without it. And often I would forget what I even ordered. So there's that part of it where I'm so afraid that if I go back, to the US and I have a normal life again, I'm gonna end up with, four cars like I had at one point, credit card debt or a huge mortgage for a house that I'm not happy in, and then I'll be stuck again.
Yeah, but I don't think that'll happen. I think you've learned your lesson, man. And I think it's something I learned as well, is that we all have far too much stuff, far more than we need.
Yeah, and
And now it's the opposite for me. When I start getting too much stuff, I start getting unhappy. It starts freaking me out. I'd rather have a few quality things than a whole bunch of garbage. Or like, I spent some time with people who have homes, like pretty much everyone. And what blows my mind is just the waste, dude. Just they have rooms filled with stuff that hasn't been touched in months and months and months. And it just, I never want to be like that, man. I just don't think that's healthy psychologically
yeah, and
or spiritually.
I definitely agree. And I think the only reason why I've been okay with it is because I just have that 65-liter duffel bag that once that's full, it's full, and I have to get rid of things. So it kind of forces me every 3 months to reevaluate my life and either give away or throw away things that I'm not going to be using the next couple months. And I don't know if this is a good thing, a genius idea, or it's completely sacrilegious, but every time I go to another country and I want to do jiu-jitsu, I go out and, they don't have a rental gi. I'll go and buy a cheap gi, and I'll try to buy, very basic gi, and I'll wear it for those 2 months or so, and I'll just give it to the gym and say, like, thanks, you can use this, you can give this to the next person. And part of that is, it is a huge waste of money to be buying a new gi every couple of months, but at the same time, because I can't travel with it, I know, maybe the next place I'm going to go, I'm not going to be rolling for 2 or 3 months. It just frees me up.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, sticking with the jiu-jitsu theme, what I wanted to ask you as well, Johnny, is you've fought in Thailand Muay Thai. Now, it's my understanding when you moved to Thailand, you hadn't done any martial arts before except wrestling. Is that correct?
Yeah, except for actually, this is kind of a good point. Is I think when I was really young, I might have been like 10 or 11, 12. I saw a banner special, a big banner that says $99 summer Aikido special includes gi.
Wow.
And I begged my parents to sign me up for it. And I remember, I specifically remember, going to that class and thinking like, wow, this is so cool. I'm wearing one of these, karate gis, and instantly thinking, this is complete BS. And I didn't know anything about martial arts back then, but I knew even as a child that it was BS because it felt like they just wanted you to kind of dangle the next belt in front of you so you can get to it, so you can just continue and keep paying, the fee. I mean, technically, I should be a yellow belt or, whatever it is by now. But I told my parents, I said, no, like, don't pay another $99 because this is, this is a complete waste of time. And the worst thing that happened was because of that experience, for the next 10 years, I assumed all martial arts were BS. And the only ones that, you hear about because they're the most popular are things like karate or taekwondo or kung fu. And in my mind, all of them were just a con where they teach you, to memorize these hatha routines and hakka routines where you're just dancing around. It was all theory, nothing actually worked. And I was so convinced that all martial arts, especially anything with a gi, was complete, crap, that even if somebody had tried to introduce me to jiu-jitsu, even if I walked by a jiu-jitsu academy, even if a friend tried to get me to do it, I wouldn't have joined because of the bad experience I had with Aikido or Hapkido or whatever it was called.
Well, I mean, that's the sad truth is that most martial arts are just total BS, and you just happen to have stumbled upon some of the functional ones in later stages in life. One of the question I wanted to ask is, you did these fights in Thailand, and in fact, before I get to my question, I have another one, which is what was that like? What was it? Because I really respect Muay Thai. I think it's, in my opinion, right up there with the best of the best martial arts, and to go into Thailand and compete in their martial art, it's just amazing. I'm really, really proud of you that you did that. Can you tell us a little bit more about what that was like and why you've stopped doing it and if you'd go back and do it again?
Yeah, so I kind of accidentally stumbled upon it. I was teaching scuba diving in Thailand, and I was on this little island called Koh Lanta at the time, which is a beautiful island. But aside from scuba diving, there was really nothing else to do. So on the days I wasn't working, I wanted to get in shape. I wanted a hobby. So, I had seen some Muay Thai fights in Bangkok, but I never really thought I would do it myself. And I joined the gym, and I had known. I knew nothing about what it should be like, and it wasn't until probably 3 or 4 years later that I even, took a class in the US and realized how different it is in Thailand. It really is different. Like I'm willing to bet that jiu-jitsu in Brazil and in like San Diego is probably, pretty similar to each other, in, training. But the Muay Thai in San Diego versus the Muay Thai in Thailand is completely different. And, a lot of it has to do with liability laws. A lot of it has to do with the number of instructors and the just kind of the mindset behind it, where on pretty much, day one, we started sparring. And that I would say that is what turned me on to Muay Thai in Thailand so much. And I think that's what turned me on to jiu-jitsu when I first started doing it so much as well, is that we actually got to put what we learned into practice. Even today, I actually don't love learning techniques. And I think that's another reason why I haven't advanced more, is because I just love sparring. It's what's exciting to me. And in Muay Thai, it was basically, you do some exercises like the runs, but then you start hitting pads and then you start sparring. And because the instructors don't really speak much English, they're not, they're even explaining to you why you're doing something or how to do it. They're just correcting you as you're doing it.
So I wanted to ask, why haven't you competed in jiu-jitsu? Because I would have thought it would be, in my opinion, it's much less daunting to enter a grappling competition than it is a striking competition. I'm quite interested to know why you haven't done that yet.
I think The main reason why I haven't yet is I know as a white belt, if I compete, it's almost kind of like I'm hoping to just dominate other people who maybe weren't as experienced, or just happen to be stronger or just, to just, I don't want to even say get lucky on them, but to me, it wouldn't really be winning. If even if I won my category as a white belt, I feel like once I get to the blue belt level, I definitely want to compete because I think and then it's a, kind of a very like more of a level playing field where everybody knows, what they're doing as a blue belt, especially if you're competing. And then we're actually testing, our skill, our technique, our knowledge, and then part of athleticism as well. While as a white belt, I almost kind of feel like it's almost kind of like a roll of the dice and me just trying to get into to get lucky.
I hear what you're saying, but there's some tough white belts out there. But I would suggest go try out a white belt comp. I don't think it'll be as much of a walkover as you think it will be.
No.
You
I
really have some
actually,
tough.
what I was trying to say was that it's me trying to roll the dice that I don't get those guys.
Oh, I see. I see.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well,
Where
maybe next time I see you, I should give you your blue belt, huh? I think,
I
yeah. That's what we'll do. I'll roll with you next time, and if you're up to it, then I'll give you a blue belt, and then you're gonna compete. You've said it out on an international
Oh my
podcast,
God.
bro. So, but what I always try to do with these shows is, almost everyone that comes on has everyone's experienced and everyone's got interesting stories to tell, and most people are experts in one particular thing, and I really want the jiu-jitsu guys out there to take away some actionable advice. And I know there are going to be some dudes who've listened to this and heard you and I talk about how terrible our lifestyles are. And they're still going to think, screw it, I want to go travel the world doing jiu-jitsu, living in Brazil and San Diego and Asia. And I just want to live that jiu-jitsu nomad lifestyle. And perhaps they don't even want to do that. They just want to take a few months jiu-jitsu vacation or a year-long sabbatical. What, let's say, would there be three actionable pieces of advice that you'd give them about this kind of lifestyle?
Yeah, 100%. I would say the first is declutter your life as much as possible before you go. So you have the option of extending your 3 month trip to 6 months or a year if you wanted to. Probably the best book I've read to help me with that is The 4-Hour Workweek. Not even about building the business or passive income, but just the elimination portion of it or the automation portion of it, of just setting up your life. So when you're away, you have that option of staying away, and whether that's, finding a replacement roommate to rent out your flat or canceling your lease, canceling everything, your Netflix subscription or whatever you have set up that would be a reason for you to go back, getting rid of your car or at least, renting out everything to someone else long term. That's my number one advice for anyone. That even wants to go away for a month is you want to have the option to be able to stay longer if you're happy.
Okay, that's great.
I would say number two is as soon as you're not happy, and this probably should be number three, but as soon as you're not happy, stop doing it. And that's actually the number one reason why I stopped teaching scuba diving professionally is I saw the 50-year-old guy from England who hated diving. He was grumpy every day. He complained more than he was excited. He had seen everything. He no longer had that passion or that spark, but he had to, wake up and do it every day because that was his only career choice. He didn't want to go back to England. He had a Thai wife with a kid, and he was stuck. He was stuck on this island, which to somebody who just arrived
Damn.
was literally paradise, but to him it was hell.
Wow, that's amazing. That's an amazing little philosophical viewpoint. Oh, sorry as well. Like, yeah, for some people that island was paradise, and for him it was hell. It's just a different set of circumstances or a different way of looking at something can change it completely. That's a great story. Thank you for that one, John. Yeah, and number two or number three.
So I would say don't listen to those guys. So don't listen to Nick and I about the downsides because you're not going to experience that for a long time, and maybe you might never experience it. So I'm so happy that I wrote my first book when I did. It's called 12 Weeks in Thailand, The Good Life on the Cheap. And the reason why I'm happy I wrote it then is because I wrote it from a perspective of loving my life as, you know, this Muay Thai nomad, this diving nomad, where I'm making $600 a month or less and just traveling the world, just enjoying life on the cheap. And I remember specifically while I was living that life, there would be people who would put me down or say, you know, you need to go back and get a career, or money is important and, you know, you're being a bum. And luckily, I ignored those people. And even though they were technically right, where money does matter and eventually, you know, I would want to build something more, at the time, they were completely wrong. Where for those, you know, that 1 or 2 years, if I had listened to them, not like I wouldn't have had these amazing experiences and I wouldn't have enjoyed that, you know, that time, those years. So ignore all the naysayers until later, you know, and just say, you know, appreciate you telling me this. I'll put it in the back of my mind, and then just keep doing what you want to do, whether it's, you know, traveling to Thailand or to Brazil or to San Diego or, you know, wherever it is.
Wow, I have to agree with you on that one as well. And it's not easy sometimes when the voice of your friends and family and the collective is going against that little voice inside you. You know, it's not easy to choose listening to that internal voice, but it's been my experience that generally it leads to higher highs and I guess lower lows as well. But that's what life's about. Johnny, my brother, thank you so, so much for taking the time out to chat to all of us and share your amazing experiences. If the people listening want to find out more about what you do, or is there any particular place or resource you'd send them to, maybe one of your books or one of your websites?
Yeah, I would say if you guys want to know the whole story, I would definitely read my two books. The first one's called 12 Weeks in Thailand, The Good Life on the Cheap. And the second one's called Life Changes Quick. The first one's about, you know, Muay Thai, scuba diving, living in Thailand. The second one, Life Changes Quick, is about, you know, starting my online business and becoming a digital nomad. And it really is the best way to learn kind of like the ins and outs of what it's like to live this lifestyle. Other than that, you can check out my blog, johnnyfd.com. And it's where I post, you know, really whatever's on my mind today.
Yeah, it's a cool blog. I really enjoy this. I like how diverse the stuff you write is. It's not just about finance or business or nutrition. It's a whole wide variety of topics, and it's very cool. I thoroughly enjoy your blog. Yeah, my man. Well, thank you so much again, Johnny, and I look forward to seeing you somewhere else in the world soon.
And maybe on the mat.
Yeah, on the mat. We'll have a role, and if you've got the skills to pay the bills, you'll get your blue belt, right?
Oh, man, I better hit the gym and start training again.
Cool, my brother. Peace out.
All right, see you guys. Bye-bye.
Oh, it's really good to chat with Johnny. It brings back a bunch of memories. You know, Thailand is one of those places it will always have a special place in my heart, and it's one of the first places that I was ever truly, truly happy. In fact, it's so important to me that I got the word gratitude in Thai tattooed on my arm, because I was so thankful for my experiences and my time there. I highly recommend, if you have not yet checked it out, and especially if you're a young jiu-jitsu guy or girl and you don't have too many responsibilities and you have the ability to get away for a few months, I would say don't go to Brazil. I would say go to Thailand. I really mean that. Not that I have anything against Brazil. I just think Thailand is a way more fun place, and it's way more different than anything you can imagine if you're in the West. In fact, one of my guests coming up soon is a good friend of mine who also lives out there in Thailand. He was bitten by the bug and he absolutely loves it. And he'll have some more cool stories about Thailand. But otherwise, thanks so much for listening, and I'll be back next week with another episode of the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood podcast. Until then, peace out.